It's the next year on podtech.net. I'm Matt Kelly, and I'm joined today by two gentlemen from Morristown, Tennessee, John Q. McMillan and Xander Carey. They are the guys behind driveelectric.org. It is a company that has created an electric vehicle called the Defiant. Gentlemen, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you for having
us.
First of all, John, let's start with you. Tell me a little bit about yourself. I understand you've got quite a background and interest in electric vehicles starting from a very early age.
Oh, most definitely from a very early age. I suppose my earliest memory actually goes back to when I was about 5 years old, and my father had this brilliant idea to take a little starter motor and hook it to a little pedal tractor I had. And I can remember clearly us sitting there on a linoleum floor messing with that thing. Unfortunately, we never quite finished that project, but I tell you, that made a big impact on me from the very beginning. And then a few years later, I built an electric go-kart and sort of evolved on to that when I was in high school and college.
A man maybe ahead of his time?
I think my father was, for sure.
And Xander Carey, why don't you give our community a little bit of background on yourself?
Well, John and I have used to be an instructor of mine in college, and over the years we've had a variety of business dealings. He knew my background in the marketing area, and we started working together on the Defiant, doing it on the weekends, on the weeknights. And it's really picking up speed to a point that we're looking at an international offering.
Well, let's get right to the vehicle, the Defiant. Introduce our community to this vehicle.
Well, the Defiant is a three-wheeled electric vehicle. We decided to use three wheels instead of four because the three wheels actually allow us to do a couple of things. It means less rolling resistance for the tires at slow speeds, and then allows us to put an aerodynamic shape to it for less drag at high speeds.
Where did you come up with the design concept, and what made you settle on this style?
Well, I had originally, back in like 1983 or 4, had a electric dune buggy. And it was one of those with a nice, flowing curves to it and everything. And it had a top speed of in excess of 60 miles an hour. I put that project on the shelf because for better than 16 years, I actually lived off the grid and generated all my electric power and didn't really have enough extra electricity to charge up batteries for the car at that time. But when I hooked back up to the grid a few years ago, I got to thinking about it and thinking about what I could do and how I could challenge myself to do more. And I realized that three wheels, as I said, meant less rolling resistance and could be lighter, more maneuverable. Also, that I wanted to still have the flowing, smooth aerodynamic shape to it the dune buggy had. So that's sort of what inspired the whole creation of it.
And I understand that you are getting quite a bit of interest in that vehicle.
Yes, quite a bit. We actually had another partner join us a few months ago, and he brought on board some additional resources. And we have a rather large project going beyond the kit car version that the Defiant is into a vehicle we call the Predator, which will be a fully commercialized and manufactured electric vehicle.
And that's an association with the Quebec Advanced Transportation Institute. Talk about that alliance for a moment, will you?
Well, the consortium, as John was indicating, with our Canadian partner, he really went to bat in getting interest. Now, Canadians and in general are, they call themselves a green country. They operate hydroelectric dams. When we were up there the first time, there was one interesting thing. Along the highways, they have all these lights running constantly at night. And, there's nothing, no homes, no cities near that. And our partner had asked, he said, we have those running, don't you? And I said, no, why? And he said, because we have so much green energy, we can't store all of it. So taking into account that the municipalities, the government approach to it, their support of electric vehicles, it's a no-brainer that, a country like Canada would be optimal for getting with them because they are so focused on the utilization of electric power, not only for cars, but they're, as I said, they want to go completely green. And having that type of support in and of itself is a major step beyond what you've got in the U.S. right now, where if at best electric vehicles, the approach to it is piecemeal work. And in that particular country, that location, they're all gung-ho as the progress of the project at this point has shown that they completely support it.
And Xander, let's just talk about that a little bit more. Why do you think that other countries like Canada are so much further ahead of the United States and embrace this technology more readily?
We've tossed that back and forth, and at base, I think you can go right back to from the very beginning. Let's take the metric system as an idea. Everybody else in the world uses it. I think, in general, the U.S. is dominant force in innovation. They are a dominant force in productive capability. They're a dominant force in, you know, sponsoring many different geopolitical changes. But as far as Americans in general, myself included, we are very slow to change. We like what we have. Change is painful for us, and we won't do it unless it's necessary, if it's forced on us. And that's, you know, right now we can see that evident in the price of gas going up. So that's the only time when you've really seen a sponsorship and the ideology of electric vehicles come back to the forefront and people seriously looking at them as a necessity for the needs of tomorrow. Because right now, no matter which way you look at it, gas might be $2 now, $2.35. It can only go up.
So, John, your company seems to be helping to advance this change. You've gone ahead and developed the Defiant as a kit car. What is the base sticker price for that kit car, and how does it basically work?
The kit car itself, depending on, because the people are going to be able to buy basically some components wherever they want to as far as that goes, it's hard to say a sticker price on it, so to speak. We're developing the chassis. That would be on the order of around $500. It could actually be driven as we've done it without a body. If you wanted to add a body, that's going to add another couple $1,000s for a slick body that we're going to manufacture that can actually fit on it. So the Defiant being a kit car is almost like a custom-built motorcycle, literally.
And that has progressed now to the Predator, and this is promising to be a sporty electric car with a top speed of around 70 miles per hour and a commuting range of over 100 miles per day. That's pretty significant when you consider that General Motors is announcing the Volt with a variety of propulsion platforms going about 40 miles per day without using gasoline. How are you able to achieve what you're able to achieve with this Predator, and talk to us a little bit more about that vehicle?
We have a couple of focuses. One is simplicity. We believe in keeping things as simple as possible. To that end, for example, we use DC drive components instead of the more expensive AC current. The cost-saving measure, also simplicity again, the DC components are much more simple to use. They've been around a lot longer. They're much more reliable, in our opinion, and cost-effective. Our goal is not to create the vehicle to compete with the Tesla, for example. It's a great car, and if you want to go 0 to 60 in 3.6 seconds, more power to you. If you got a spare $100,000, that's wonderful. We're designing a lightweight, efficient vehicle that will weigh in at about 1,500 pounds. By being very aerodynamic, we're targeting a coefficient of drag of 0.19, which is extremely aerodynamic. And with a significant 144-volt battery pack, we're anticipating a one-time full charge range, so to speak, of about 60 to 75 miles on a charge. However, we call it a daily commuting range because if you plug in for about 5 or 6 hours during the day, you essentially double your range.
When you say it's using a DC component, are we talking 110 volts to recharge it as opposed to a 220 that may be needed with some of these other electric vehicles we're hearing about?
We're going to actually have two options for that. We'll have an onboard standard charger that'll plug into any 120 volt outlet, and then we're going to also market a separate charger that, like if you had it parked in your garage and you want a little bit quicker charge or something, would plug into like a dryer outlet.
Are there any regenerative braking components to this vehicle?
No, we've not integrated that at this time. One of the things that I've studied says that, you know, typical regenerative braking can add maybe 7 to 10% to the range of an electric vehicle. But quite honestly, we've also read that if people just improve their regular driving habits, they can improve their gas mileage 10 to 15%. So we're actually going to focus a little bit on education just to say, you know what, keep your tires inflated, avoid jackrabbit starts, for example. We feel like that is going to add to the complexity of the vehicle as well. Perhaps at some later time we'll address that. We are also addressing the issue of a long-range trip, and we're developing an auxiliary power trailer for that. Our concept is the trailer would have about a 20-horsepower biodiesel or alternate fuel engine on it, generating approximately 10 kilowatts of electricity, and that should be enough to provide a stable vehicle speed of around 55 to 60 miles an hour, and then basically your range at that point is limited by the fuel you have on board. We do this as a detachable trailer so that you don't have to haul around the extra 300 or 400 pounds of weight when you don't need it.
Xander, who is your target market on this vehicle?
You know, we're really looking for those people that are the first buyers, the adventurers. If you think about cars on the market right now, you know, the Ferraris, Tesserosas, I mean, the real appeal of those is, I mean, they're sexy design. They got teeth. You look at them and they look like they're flying. And the approach to this, we've done that with the Predator. you look at it and you just say Buck Rogers, because it is so unique, it is so different, and it's got teeth. You look at it and you want to get in it. You want to jump in it. You want to see how fast the thing, you are compelled to find out more about it. And with the studies that we've done right now, both at the Canada facility as well as, you know, the items that we worked out on the website, we have yet to have somebody that has responded negatively to the look of it, feel of it, the emotional draw that it brings on. So, you know, we're looking at the applications of the car. You know, it could be a mother taking her children somewhere, someone out just doing errands one day, going to work and coming back, going on a trip and coming back. The people that we're really targeting it to are the ones that are anxious for change.
There's obvious benefits to electric power. Talk about those for a second.
Well, the thing about the car, I mean, we focus on three qualities of the car. We really look at the three E's. We look at economy, efficiency, energy. And when we say efficiency, we talk about the environment and keeping, obviously, the pollution factor down, not being reliant on international sludge sources that are out there. And there's no doubt eventually it's going to run out. When we're talking about energy, it's not only the efficient use of energy, but the clean use of energy. When we're talking about economy, we're talking about the value of what you're getting in return. I mean, if we look at a cost-benefit ratio of a standard car today, I always like to joke about owning a boat. A boat is nothing more than a hole in the water where you throw your money. And that's a lot like a car has become. If you look at something like a Hummer, when it first came out, 8 miles to the gallon, if that, very utilitarian. But people bought it up like crazy because it has an appeal for them. But we really want to look at the folks that are wanting to make this change, and we're providing that change at a sub-20 cost so that it really is available to the average Joe, the common man, the common woman, the people that want it. And right now, those things are not in reach when you combine the need for utility, performance, and economy. There's nothing out there that combines all three. As John had mentioned, the Tesla. You got $100,000? Hey, go for it.
And what are we talking about in terms of a price point for the Predator?
With everything else, and especially body design, and we're looking at sub-20.
Are you taking pre-orders? Is that something that will determine its availability, in a sense?
Well, no, we're not relying on pre-orders at any rate. Now, you know, obviously, we are taking the emails of interest, and we are maintaining a database of those folks that have shown an interest and desire to find out more information so that once we get something completed and it is available, we don't want to get in a situation where we're pre-ordering and then all of a sudden we hit a snag that we didn't anticipate and, you know, 10,000 people have ordered this thing and it's not going to be available for another 6 months because of that snag we didn't anticipate. We want to be ready to go to market and provide for everybody that wants.
What are the challenges in bringing this vehicle to market? Is perhaps the biggest challenge financing?
Financing is a huge thing. I mean, you know, with any new company, you're going to need capital outlay. Getting awareness out there, of course, you know, with folks like yourself that have an interest in getting the word out, which we obviously appreciate. Capital is a big, big situation. Obviously, research and development is a big thing that, you know, our Canadian partner has gotten in hand for us in combination with what we've done here. So, and it's also a matter of timing, too. You have to be at the right place at the right time. And the way we are now at our history at this point, we're there, but it's always a grind and it's always a push to get out there and make sure that every process is as efficient as it can be. That problematic things that typically come up in 6 months to a year, we can try to avoid those by taking a methodology that says, okay, here's the process. Now let's go back and look at it again. Now here's the process. Let's go back at it again. And a lot of those problems have been really reduced because the design is so very simple.
Where are you seeing the majority of interest? In the United States, in Canada, overseas?
Much of our response is interest is in the United States, particularly the southern tier of states, which we feel is our primary market. But we're getting a lot of interest from that area.
Your final thoughts on the Predator and the future of this electric car and electric cars in general?
I think generally we can all agree that the future of electric cars is here now. It's got to be an accepted ideology by not only individuals, but also geopolitical forces that either minimize that or maximize it to the best of their ability. I think with the future of the Predator, that we're looking really good right now. that people have responded well, that it has a great combination of qualities that everyone would want in a car, electric vehicle nature, that we can offer. And we're just excited and, quite frankly, honored to be able to do it.
As we look at the market that's out there and the vehicles that are available right now, basically I see two kinds of vehicles. The classic neighborhood electric vehicle, which is not even legal for me to drive around here. I live out in the country, and there's a 45-mile-an-hour speed limit between myself and the town. I couldn't even legally drive that vehicle. We see those kind of vehicles on the market. And we also see the Tesla, the high-end, the $108,000 Tango, for example, and those kind of vehicles. All well and good. We're designing a snazzy vehicle that kind of looks sharp, perhaps a little reminiscent of the old Triumph. I'm guilty of having a 1978 Triumph Spitfire. And that was a bit of an inspiration for me. And a nice, small, lightweight vehicle that fun to drive. Doesn't have to be the high-performance setting vehicle of a Tesla or a Lotus or whatever, but it's still fun to drive. And just that's what we're after. The commuter who's going to work, he's got to drive 25, 30 miles a day, 40 miles a day maybe, and has got to hit some highway speed, some realistic speed. So we're looking for practicality. And like Xander was saying, because of the Predator and the characteristics we're building into it, we feel like we found an excellent market niche.
And where can our community find more information about the Predator and the Defiant?
Well, primarily, you can find the best information, the most complete information from the website, driveelectric.org, which is driveelectric.org, and
shockwavemotors.com for the Predator.
And John, just before we let you go, I understand that you also have a company called Energy Quest, where people can find out more information about living off the grid. Is that correct?
That's correct. I spent more than 18 years off the grid. That's at energyquest.info. And there's information there on the earth-sheltered home that I live in, a passive solar earth-sheltered home, the hydroelectric system that powered my house, my father's A-frame, and a well house that pumped our water, and all with a car alternator and a low-head system. So, yes, they're welcome to do that.
John Q. McMillan, Xander Carey, what an absolute pleasure it is to speak to you both and to be educated by both of you today. I thank you so much for joining me on the podcast.
Well, thank you. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you, Matt.
For the next gear, I'm Matt Kelly on podtech.net.